What up, witches? It's Blackbird here. Yes, the schedule has yet been interrupted again. However, bringing you more Hail Hecate this week, we are on part four, and we are going to be discussing more of late antiquity magic and sorcery involving Hecate. This is Blackbird. I am with my good friend Scarlet, and we can't wait to share this with you. So please, enjoy.
I put a spell on you because you're mine.
Stop the things you do. Hells yes. Ooh. What's up?
What is up?
I don't know where this energy is coming from. It's been a long ass week, man. I'll tell you what. God. Oh my God. Is it ever going to get cold there?
Dude, earlier in the week, we had a quote unquote cold snap, was where it was
90?
It wasn't 90. It was like under 100. And then one of the mornings, it was like 70. Mm-mm. In the morning, and then it got up to almost 100 in the afternoon, but like it's been like 85 or something in the morning, like I'm talking about like 7 a.m.
Well, that's
and it was like ooh la la sweater weather.
Oh my God, I can't even fathom it. I would probably be going insane, because after of course 5 years of living in San Diego where it's always whatever 73 degrees is pretty astounding. And even here, like it gets up to 89, I'm like, ooh, heavens to Betsy, it's so hot. And you're like down there with your 111, like fuck you, bitch.
No, we had blackouts on not the street I live on, but the street I work on today.
Oh, great.
It was it blacked out two different times, so, and it was half the block, so.
Wow.
Because it's a semi-industrial street, so I guess we're all using the energies.
God. Well, yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure energy consumption is off the fucking charts. Well, I mean, California's getting a hurricane this weekend, so it's like,
wow.
What's happening next? Yeah, it's like their first ever tropical storm watch ever.
Yeah, usually you don't get a hurricane pattern. Usually they circulate to the other side of the Pacific.
Right.
They don't usually make landfall on our West Coast.
Pretty weird. Yay.
Why not? Just everything's topsy-turvy.
Let's do it. Something's going on weird with my voice, so please excuse. I have some water here. This is Blackbird. This is also Hex-rated.
I'm Scarlet. It's still hex rated.
Still fucking hex rated.
Okay, so Birdwatch 2023.
Birdwatch. Burb watch.
Ooh, I'm trying to make a cooing dove noise.
Oh my gosh, Mercedes and Percy. Just the epitome of parenting. Parenting? Parenting. I don't know what I'm doing here. They are so good. Little Percy hangs out on the roof and watches from afar. Now, he's been in the tree today, but so Mercedes is like trying still to sit on top of her babies, but those babies are like getting to be real size burbs now. Like they have one has full on feathers. The one that's like a few days older has like feathers now.
Yes, the pictures you sent me are magical. They're like little silver puffballs. I've never seen little baby doves because apparently they're great parents and keep them well protected.
Right.
Unlike
yes,
these
exactly.
fucking sparrows that are all over town, or the fucking chimney swifts nice. That fall down my chimney.
Aw, babies. Yeah, little no, babies. They're amazing parents. They hardly ever leave the nest. Mercedes left the nest for a little bit today, and I was able to get like good pictures of the babies together. They're both fine. They're both alive. They're thriving. Like my biggest fear is they're in a flower box on a deck. So of course I'm like, what if they get curious and they try to jump out of the flower box? And oh my God. Anyway, I feel like
maybe Percy and Mercedes have considered these things.
I'm sure.
Being the experts on themselves.
I was going to say, it is the Dove Parenting Handbook 101, I'm sure. Right?
So, inquiring minds need to know, do the bebes have names yet?
I'm still struggling.
I am a big fan of this trend of us naming doves after plural nouns in Spanish to honor the Virgen. So I would like to nominate Milagros as one of them.
Okay, I'm down. Milagros. Hey, that's very, that's apropos, too. Because it means beans, right?
Milagros means miracles?
Oh, well, I'm really bad at that. I'm cutting that.
Okay, so one will be Milagros and the other will be Frijoles.
Now I have to leave this part in my stupidity. Why am I thinking?
Yes, let's name one beans. You know, the famous epithet of that well-renowned Catholic Marian cult, Our Lady of the Beans.
Oh my god. Oh, my stomach hurts. Can we please call one Frijoles?
We're calling. Pick which one is derpier, and that one's going to be beans.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
Yeah, the second one will be beans, or Frijoles.
Wow. I think I got confused with the Milagro Bean War and was like, it means the Bean War. Oh my god, I swear to god.
Why would I be like, yeah, let's call it beans?
I am not high, I promise.
Oh my god, I totally want to do a like blasphemous Our Lady of the Beans ritual that will involve tacos and bean dip and
I'm there.
Refried beans.
Yes.
And
god, I got the fucking giggles. That is hilarious. Well, I've never been one to say I even can remotely remember any Spanish, but I do know frijoles, and it's not the same as milagros. So, good job. Moving on. Yes, those are now their names. I will pick the derpier one.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Little did you know one. What was your other suggestion?
I didn't have one yet because I just really like milagros. I just plural nouns as a name. It cracks me up. So like Mercedes and like Dolores.
Right. Yeah. So Milagros and Frijoles, both plural. It's the greatest. Oh, poor babies. They don't even know. All right. That was Bird Corner. Anyway, they're very adorable. Still taking lots of pictures. What about you? Nature Corner? Anything happening?
Hecate Hecate Corner. I did a little Hecate ritual last night. Hecate's day, one of her feast days traditionally was on Sunday the 13th. And then Wednesday was the dark moon. So I slapped those two events together and did something last night.
Perfect.
That is neither of those days nor in between either of them. and it was very poorly attended. It was me and my dear friend, Katie O. But it was delightful. I made some kind of not the greatest dolmas I've ever made.
Even the worst dolmas are still delicious.
I got really ambitious with how many I thought I was going to make. And so the depth of the pan to the amount of liquid to the amount of time it was cooking was slightly not well calibrated. I did them with my favorite thing ever. Before I even really knew much about cooking, I was at probably like Whole Foods or someplace, and I was looking at all the different kinds of rices, and they had forbidden rice, which is just like a black purple rice. And I was like, one, goth, yes. Two, forbidden, also goth, yes. Very delish. They were very, I put ground up pine nuts and mint. Mm. and parsley and basil and oregano.
Okay.
And a little bit of allspice, you know? Ooh, just to give it a little,
just to get a little zhuzh kick, a little.
And then I made these, I combined several recipes that are Georgian, the country in the Caucasus, not the state.
Right.
Because that is the historical region of Colchis, which is where Medea, Hecate's, one of her favored priestesses, that is where she is fabled to be from. So I sliced up some eggplants long ways into thin strips and fried those up on both sides. Got them nice and oily and gooey and crispy. Mm. And then I made a filling that was also cilantro and parsley and dill and fenugreek, which I had never used before, but was I got at the Lebanese grocery store down the street.
Delicious.
And what else was in there? And it was like hazelnuts and sherry vinegar and some other stuff. And so you blend all that up into this like awesome, delicious, nutty herbal paste. And then you'd like smear each long strip of eggplant and then roll them up. And then you just have these delicious, ooey gooey, nutty eggplant treats. They were a big hit. I ate them all
up. Fantastic. Big hit with me.
With me and my one friend.
That sounds so good. I just became the heiress of two eggplants. So if that's a thing, I'm going to call myself the heiress of eggplants. Anyway, I roasted one, making baba ganoush.
Yum. And always excellent.
Second, sliced up, put some salt on it. I'm going to make eggplant parmesan, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's been fucking discs of eggplant. I'll find something to do with them. I don't give a shit.
I still mean to do a big nightshade banquet. I think that would be very fun.
Yes.
So all the edible nightshades that are not poisonous, which of course includes eggplants and potatoes and tomatoes and tomatillos. And
there's a lot of stuff you can make there. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I could just do like an all tomato or all potato or all eggplant night, to be honest with you. I could just do like an all like tomato gazpacho night. I was thinking of doing that for this feast. Do like a sampler of tomato soup shooters and like serve them in like petite glasses or shot glasses or something. So have like, you know, a classic tomato soup, you know, like
you're
pairing with a grilled cheese or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then maybe like a green sort of tomatillo one.
Yes.
Maybe like a more roasted, smoky like mole scented ancho smoked pepper one, and just do a sampler. But then also what
I
else
would like to come to that party, please.
Yes. And
please.
Then peppers, spicy and otherwise, are also nightshades. So there are lots of nightshade adventures to be had. And then
all that to be said is, so did you do a ritual last
we
night?
Did and since it was I wasn't super prepared, so I just wrote out some pointers from the Hail Hecate class. So I did, I read the Orphic hymn to Hecate in English and in Greek.
Nice.
And I sang the little song that Jack Grail penned. And we set aside a plate of all a sampling of all the dishes, and then left it in the yard for the homies later.
Awesome.
And but in the meantime, I told you I get the dums.
Yes.
First.
And then you get the dropsies.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So
well,
first I have all these like little LED candles everywhere, and some of them came in these like little frosted glass holders to make them look a little less fake. One of those just spontaneously fell off the shelf and broke.
Wow.
And then a tarot card that I, cause I have a bathroom that's all framed tarot cards from like almost floor to ceiling. One of those fell off the wall.
Which one?
The Ace of Swords.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying anything. Are you saying something? I'm not saying.
I mean, to be fair, that one's fallen off before because it doesn't have a proper hook on the back and is actually used like a double sticky, like 3M plastic thing. Hanger. Yeah. And then what else broke? Oh, my Strophilos broke.
Oh shit.
It's okay. No. I can restring it. The string broke.
Yeah.
And then one of my friends who was going to attend, who was no call, no show, had requested prosperity magic.
So we did it without her.
and we just made I got out the crystals and did a little smattering of good luck, guys. So I did some jade, which of course is good luck and prosperity, and is the all purpose good luck guy in a lot of cultures. And did some malachite. Again, it's green. So money. It's also a ore of copper. And copper is a coinage material. Pyrite, fool's gold, obvious. Good
for, yep.
I did some red tiger's eye because tiger's eye in general is really good for like luck and gambling.
Yeah.
And I did some snowflake obsidian because it is also for good luck. Yeah. And kind of more in like a protection sort of capacity, but mix it up. I didn't want to do like all clashy green colors. And then I had some, like, someone had gifted me just some like little dollar store tiny bottles, and they're like, about an inch tall and maybe like 3/4 of an inch or like wide, so little wee guys, like the size of a thimble. And so I was like, okay, what are we gonna do with these? And then I was like, let's just put them in little bottles. Bing bang boom, we got a little prosperity talisman immediately. Like, nice. So then we're cleaning up and I pick mine up to like shake it because
that's what you do with shit inside a bottle.
Yeah, that's what you do with little things in a bottle.
Shake it.
And then just immediately dropped it and shattered it on the floor.
Oh my god.
So just a lot of like Greek, like breaking plates on the floor and everything.
Oh shit. You were filled with the spirit, if I may say.
Yeah, I don't know what was going on. I had the dropsies big time.
I was gonna say, did you feel different? Did you feel well, okay, do we wanna talk about this week? Before we talk about how your ritual went and how you felt, or do you, whatever order you want to do things in.
I guess let's talk about the lecture series this week, and then maybe we can circle back to my ritual.
That's what I was thinking, because I don't know. I had a bit of an experience with because I just finally got my Strophilos made and working. I had a bit of an experience. It was very.
Can you briefly describe? Because we've talked about it on the show before. Because I made one some years ago. But do you want to just say kind of what it is and what it's about?
Sure. A lot of people conflate the word Strophilos with Hecate's wheel. It's not the same thing. The Strophilos is like a round disc that you string two strings through the center of and offsetting holes in the center of the disc. This is hard for me to explain, but I'm doing
like
the best
a button.
I can. Yeah, like a button, but a little bit closer together. And then you run two strings through it. Then you take your strings in each hand and you kind of like is if you were doing with a jump rope, you kind of wind this toy up. It's not really a toy. But wind this device. Sorry. It is a toy sometimes. But wind this device up by I'm doing the motion. What would you? This is like a tiny jump rope, but you're not jumping it. Right.
Try to jump it. It is very small.
So the disc is whirring away from you. While you're winding this, and you wind it pretty tight, you wind it so that the string starts, doubling back on itself. Your hands are getting closer and closer together, and then you slowly start releasing, and it'll spin away from you. And then when you pull your hands toward, it spins toward you. I may be doing the...
Yeah, I don't actually know which...
I don't know which way is which, but you open and close your hands a little.
It's basically doing like a yo-yo spinning. Action where yeah, it's exactly. like spinning in and out. Right. But instead of just the one string that's winding itself around a disc or like a yo-yo ball, it's you got two. So
right.
basically it's Good. Like the simplest of technologies that is yes. deceptively difficult to learn initially.
Have we even, you know what? I think we talked, well, I was going to say, I think we kind of touched on this, but so the intention is, you know, you draw on this Straphalos, you draw certain like magical symbols, names, and within the Straphalos, you conjure, for lack of a better word, or imprint and inks. Is that how you say it?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Which is a spirit to help you use this device to contact the deity.
Right. So it's sort of like a little meditative device, the way right. that like those little hand drums in some Buddhist traditions or any kind of like, or like those two little chimes or any kind of like very, very simple tactile audio
repetitive
thing right. that is obviously that has its own meditative hypnotic qualities to it. And the origin of this is an inx was originally a type of bird that was used in divination. They were like, they had like long necks. So I don't know. I guess they thought that they were like snaky snake birds. And they were like, I don't know. But they were given this like sort of otherworldly quality. But using live birds in your rituals is...
Maybe
quite
don't.
An affair. So they quickly replaced that whole rigmarole with just this device that sort of represented using
the snake
bird. Because you can make the little disc part, depending on the string and the size of the holes and like the texture of it, it can make like a little like whirring or hissing noise.
Right.
So these like angry birds would make a hissing noise. So anyway, this is very obscure and kind of the logic of it is lost to the ages. But long story yes. short, it's like a very simple, it's almost like, if, like, you know, in old timey movies where people are getting hypnotized and the magician is
the
like
watch.
Yeah, yeah. Like dangling a watch in front of somebody. It's basically just sort of this metronomic type of hypnotic meditative device. But yes, right. In you traditionally would kind of associate it or tie a sort of spirit familiar or helper to this
to
object.
It. Right.
And in ancient Greek magic, that is called an inx. And that is obviously this is transliterated from the Greek, but it's spelled Y-N... wait.
I-Y-N-X?
Yes.
Maybe?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know. I'm not looking at it, but I think that's right. INX. and also, like, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, beyond it being meditative, in antiquity, it was used as a compulsion method or as, like to call.
Yes. Yes? Sort of like right. It's like a kind of like a mini bull roar. That's like another yeah. device that's used
oh,
in
nice.
Other magical traditions.
Right. So I was doing that and I think I texted you cause I was like, I can't make it work. And then finally it just started working. I don't know.
Which like, is exactly what I told you would happen.
Right. Which you were like, I can't tell you how to do it, except I just started doing it. And then finally it did it. So, right. That kind of happened. And while it was happening, I was saying some of the epithets and I mean, this happened too when I was just listening to something or I get like full on body chills. So it's like, and it was on the night before the new moon and I was standing outside doing the Straphalos and calling Brimo and just like full fucking body chills. It was like there was no like... it was like not a secret. You know what I mean? Like it was like, I'm here. like I fucking told you, you know, like it was no matter how much
of Hecate that is Brimo's catchphrases. I fucking told you. Fuck around, find out. That's Brimo. Fuck around,
that 100%. And that was, yeah. And that was kind of what was happening. It was like, just like, as usual, a little sarcastic. Like, you were looking for me right here. I was like, I know. Okay. I'm sorry. It's like, there was no, you don't need to, like, there was a sense of like liking it. Does that make sense? Oh, wow. I say that a lot. It makes sense.
Of course it makes sense.
I know. It does. I know. I'm not going to second guess myself. It made sense because it felt like she was like, oh, like you're doing that. Okay. It was kind of like that energy.
Kicking it old school.
Yeah. Yeah. Like
one of my old throwback jams.
Yeah. Like appreciative almost. And I'm like, oh shit, this is a whole aspect that I haven't even like known about or done because I've just been like kicking it like normal. Like, oh, I think that he's onto something. I think by calling the names or the epithets, it does do something.
This is completely unrelated, but can I talk to you about what my kicking it old school summertime jam is?
Yes.
It is Planet of the Bass.
Oh my God.
Which is a parody of 90s Eurotrash dance. And
it
was
very big.
It was like a
1 minute
short, and they finally dropped like a whole parody video, and it is just a delight. It's got all the hallmarks of an amazing like jam from 1994. It's got semi not well translated English lyrics.
Yes.
It's got random shout outs to vague notions of like world peace that like don't mean anything. There's there's a guy that just starts talking in the middle of it.
Has to be always
obviously
I talk to you.
Yes.
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
The best.
Some real McCoy action, LaBouche, right. Ace of Base.
It's like everything all
Black Box.
One.
You know what?
Oh my God.
CNC Music Factory. They're not Euro, but definitely in that vein. So it has been a delight for me. And it like it's one of those things where I was like, haha, isn't that so funny? It's like totally like the 90s. And then I was like, no, I legitimately love this song. It's not even
really
a joke
great.
Anymore.
I
it's
love
like
it.
A legitimate banger. Anyway, I'm sorry. Please continue.
Okay. No, I think I covered it.
I feel
it.
Like people need to know. If for some reason you're not on social media and haven't been exposed to this, please look up Planet of the Bass.
I'm pretty sure you exposed me and I was at once enthralled, although that is a little past my, I don't know. It wasn't like I was already.
You just quoted Real McCoy, so don't play like.
That's true. You're right.
You are
okay.
Not familiar
All
with
right.
this genre.
Fine. I am. You know what song I always hated, though, was the Crystal Waters. Sorry. Hated it.
You know who choreographed the music video to that?
No.
Oh, my
Tell
God.
Tell me.
I just told
Probably somebody that. Awesome.
It was.
Of course it was. I never saw the video, though. So maybe if I see the video, I'll like the song better. I don't know. I just never liked it. Maybe it's that refrain. I can't take it. But it is very repetitive in that genre. You'll remember. You will also look it up while we're talking.
I will just look it up right now.
This was quite a detour. Quite.
I'm sorry, but I mean, we need to bring back the early 90s. I have been trying single-handedly to bring back early 90s dance music. I've had several birthday parties, much to the chagrin
self.
Of my
yes.
husband and party goers.
Sorry.
I insist on doing all early 90s dance music. I've even created an early 90s dance music bingo take a shot game.
Whoa.
That includes things like songs about butts, random dude talking in the middle of the song, a song that describes the dance that you do while listening to the song.
Yes. Oh, God. Oh, man. That's a lot. Anyway, it was a very, oh. it was, oh, go. Did you figure it out? Okay.
Yes. Michael K. Williams. choreographed okay. it, who was famously, you would probably recognize him as Omar from The Wire.
Yes.
He was, but he's also yes. been it. He recently passed away, which was actually really
very
sad.
But
he was in several other. I first saw him in Boardwalk Empire, but.
Yes, same as.
Yeah. But even though he's very famous for playing gangsters and very, very dramatic roles, he started off as a dancer.
That's amazing. I did not know that. Or maybe I did somewhere in the deep recesses of my mind. But that is so that might give me a new appreciation. I will go watch the video and see. I made Pappy show me a whole bunch of videos the other night. I was like, I never had MTV growing up. Show me all your favorite videos. He's like, what?
And then he said, like, what? And then inexplicably his DJ, wah, air horn sounded like,
yes.
Wicka, wicka. Where are all these noises coming from?
I don't know. But I have seen many videos. He kept naming things. I'm like, yeah, I've seen that one. He's like, well, you have seen videos then. I'm like, well, but I didn't like grow up with the ones in the 90s. Like I saw some in the early 80s, but like all the 90s completely passed me by. I had no access to, except for I would go over to a friend's house and watch 120 minutes because, you know, I'm old school goth.
Hell yeah.
So anyway, we watched a bunch of Missy Elliott videos and then called it a night because I was wanting to dance and then I was tired. So, you know, music makes me lose control. Okay. So getting back to this week, like getting all the way back around to what we learned this week. So this week we're talking about like magical voices and true names and assuming the what he calls the God face or the Godhead. Now, just to like, I'm just going to try to summarize this in the best way I know how. So we covered the fact that there's like an order to the things that you might say to call on a deity in antiquity. And that's like the status of your pureness, however you want to. I mean, they defined it very specifically, but we're going to say however you want to define that. Timing, which like be on the day or on the like on a day that you can defend to the gods and goddesses, an offering, the actual call, and then the naming of the epithets. So what he basically is talking about this week is in order to even start doing those things, there's also another tactic that you probably should think about throwing in. And that is assuming, like, to me, it's about assuming you are like proving that, not proving, but like stating that you are worthy to make this call. That's kind of what I got out of it. Now, literally in antiquity, they would put on a mask of either a deity that was related to the deity you're calling. Like, say it's the example was Osiris and Horus. The magician or the sorcerer would put on an actual mask and say, I am your son calling you, basically to compel the god to take notice.
Right. So the week before, what you just listed was basically like what Jack Grill refers to as sorceress devotion.
Right.
Which is different than conventional devotion. And so then the next phase would be if you were actually trying to do some sorcery, affect some kind of magic, now you've got to compel the gods. You've got to like beg and plead and bribe and threaten and whatever you got to do to actually,
right.
You've summoned the god and now you're trying to get them to help
them
you
to
with
do
your thing.
What you want. Right. Right. And he does talk about the fact that, you know, normal people that would be bringing their problems to a sorcerer, just like basically, they're bringing it to somebody else because it's a lot of work. I mean, to do these steps and to assume a godhead and compel a god, it wasn't really the normal course of things because basically in antiquity, they believed that the gods were like, well, we've already stated, like they kind of did made offerings and things to just keep the gods off their back or away. But they also believed that fate controlled everything, that your destiny was already predetermined before you were born, and that there was very little you could do to change that, except maybe somebody that has some magic can maybe coerce the gods into just tweaking that destiny just a little bit.
Right. He had a funny line because he was describing, like, you know, if your daughter's sick, you know, first you might make some offerings to your household gods or your ancestors or go to a local shrine. If that didn't work, you might go to a specialty temple, like a temple of Asclepius, who's specifically a god of healing, something like that, or maybe a temple of Artemis because she's a patron of young girls. And then if that doesn't work, then you would start going more outside the norm and maybe seeing a sorcerer or something. But he was saying, you know, normal people would usually not stay for the sorcery part, not because they thought it was sketchy and fake, but because it was sketchy and would work.
Right.
So, I mean, just the way it is today. I mean, lots of people shy away from things that have to do with magic or dark forces or sorcery. They're just like, that's not in my wheelhouse. I don't want to get mixed in with that. I don't want to open these doors.
It could
and
be bad.
Summon things that I cannot banish. Like,
right.
You know, and,
right.
But I believe in it. I think it works. So I will contract someone to do it for me.
Right. Right. Yeah. I liked how, well, he talked about, you know, in the beginning, he talked about like fate and necessity. He kept using the word, you know, necessity or bitter necessity, and how, you know, we kind of like succumb to this, or in antiquity, they would just succumb to their fate. You know, like, this is my life. I am here to wash this floor every fucking day for the rest of my life, you know? And then to want anything outside of that, like you said, you might have to do some special temple stuff, or you might seek out an actual sorcerer in order to help, you know, like change even a little. And it wasn't like you could change a lot, right? You couldn't, they didn't believe that you could go from like being a peasant to a king by magic. That was not what this magic was trying to do. It was more like, hey, could I get a little bit of good fortune, or, you know, let me find a treasure, or help my child that's being, you know, held in slavery or whatever. Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I really liked the part about. So he talks about two different things. He talks about either assuming a related deity that will compel the deity that you're trying to call, like son to a father or mother, or, you know, some other relation. But I liked the part that he talked about assuming and claiming that you are divine yourself, that you are made up of the same stuff that the gods are made up of.
Right. What, and that's obviously a much more modern take. Well, I wanted to say as a side note before we get into that, because he's basically taking these spells from the PGM and other late antique sources and being like, this is a breakdown of how this magic functioned and what the protocols were. So he's basically like, this is how people were doing it. And then he goes on to sort of be like, and this is how we could adapt it. But so it's just a fact that people would be like, oh, Isis, I am your son, Horus, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, well, you know, reading this, you have to ask the question, does the sorcerer think that Isis is stupid? Like, does she really think that you are Horus and is going to fall for that?
Right.
And if not, why would you do it? And so this gets us to the second idea of you're basically claiming your own divinity as a conscious being that is part of this universe. And we all have that animating spark of the divine, which is a very prominent concept in a lot of currents that I follow. And is historically accurate. That's not just putting a modern spin on a an old topic, because you do in fact have these ancient spells where instead of masquerading as a different god that the one you're petitioning would be sympathetic to, you're basically saying, I am a god, I'm a god myself, or you know, I am worthy of summoning you here and compelling you to help me.
Right. Yeah, basically my note that I wrote was, you have to embody or really believe in yourself and what you're doing, i.e. channel that shit. And basically, like, the god will listen to you as you present yourself to be that, to be divine, or to be an like a channeling of another deity.
And he fully admits that, like, a lot of us that are into alternate spirituality, that are into sorcery, struggle with feeling being an outsider or feeling disenfranchised in some way. So having the confidence to approach a deity, especially if you're like a hard polytheist or something, and being like, yes, you should listen to me, I too am divine, is a lot easier said than done.
Right. It feels kind of conceited. I mean, it's not easy for those of us that kind of grew up, you know, kind of beaten down, you know, like to really believe that or even to claim that feels almost, I don't know, not, I don't want to say sacrilegious because that's not what I'm trying to say, but like, it feels like a lot, like you're being real bold. Right. But this is where I started thinking, and it immediately brought to mind a poem that I wrote. This was probably, I think, Poetry Corner. I wrote it about a year and a half ago. And to me, this is literally me doing exactly what he said in this poem. Because this poem, the name of the poem is called I Bring Teeth. And it goes like this. I am the cat face. I am the bone mother, the shape twister, the shard barrier. I am the creator, the card turner, the blood holder. I am the world breaker. That's it.
Oh, shit.
So, I mean, that's kind of like, that's kind of what I'm doing.
Yes, absolutely, right? It is.
Yeah, it is. But I didn't even know it, but I didn't know it. But like, I didn't even
but
know
you
that
did,
that's
because you wrote it.
I guess. I mean, that was kind of crazy, though, because as soon as he said something like, you know, present yourself as if you were divine, I'm like, well, shit, I already fucking wrote a thing I could read out loud right now. So I thought that was, to me, that was, I don't know if I would. And I mean, I would try it. I would try whatever, like, I'm gonna try to mask myself. And he had a good hint, like, if you don't want to like make a mask of some other god, you could just put a black piece of cloth over your face.
Yeah, basically like kind of a blindfold, but it is a mask,
right?
I took some notes on what he was saying. He was basically like, just get a piece of fabric, you can make it as arty as you want, you can make an actual mask or whatever you want to do. But yeah, you could move it through some incense. You could do a prayer or an Orphic hymn to that god over this piece of fabric and basically say, fabric, you are not fabric, but a mask of whatever god. And when I put you on, I will become you. And that which is me, that which is in me, that is name of god, will come forward. And my breath, my words, my smile, my touch, my aspect will be as name of god for all to hear and see. And I really like
insert
that.
God name here.
Insert name.
So something else I liked, and he has said this several times, and I think you just kind of said it, that in ancient Egypt, doing Egyptian magic, when you said a word out loud, it made it real, like it made it a spirit almost, like the word itself existed as its own thing. As a writer, that is super fucking powerful to me. Just like to, and I think it's true. Like whenever you hear someone maybe doing spoken word poetry or even just reading excerpts from something they've written, I think and even just reading things that other people have written, as like as you did a couple of weeks ago with the poem, it affects something. Like something changes in the air when you say things out loud. And I mean, we all know that if we had a fucking fight with our spouses, you know.
No, but especially when you're speaking to an audience, even if that audience is yourself, right. Hearing it, I mean, there's something about it becomes more real when you say something out loud as opposed yes. to just thinking it in your head. Just philosophically, like it feels more definite and real. When you're communicating to another person, now there's a moment where there was the meaning and intention behind what you were saying, and then it's coming out of your mouth and going into their ears. And so now it's part of this continuum of meaning and thought and intention that right. is between two people. So there's your experience of it. There's it just as its own
thing in word, the air,
resonating right? in the air, as its own history of meaning. And then there's the other, the listener's experience of it. So you've got these, now it's operating on three different levels.
Yeah.
Right. Which, so I agree as someone that's a writer and loves music and loves words and loves philology and linguistics, the idea right. that words have power is like, well, duh. But I do agree that speaking things out loud definitely makes it feel different than just thinking yeah. it in your head.
Agreed.
And I also, I mean, even if you just get it down to like basic sounds and nonsense words or like just ohm, there yep. is something about feeling your vocal cords resonate in your chest and like in your head and hearing your own voice coming from inside your body back in through your ears. Right. There is like a yeah. physical effect to it. And yes. it has very real, tangible, measurable effects on your blood pressure, your brain waves, your breathing patterns. Like it is a real powerful tool.
Right.
So yeah.
So this kind of leads me to ask you, did you feel a certain way when you sang the call that he wrote, the devotional call?
Yeah. So I did it earlier in the week. I obviously did it a couple years ago when I was doing some of the rituals in the Hecatian. Or we've been saying Hecatian, but he pronounces it Hecatian. So I'm probably gonna switch back and forth.
That's fine.
But anyway, that when I first did it, it was kind of clunky because he has the musical notation, which I cannot read music. And I had my husband like sound it out on a piano and record it so I would have the melody. So hearing him sing it in the video class was actually super helpful. Yes. And it was very charming. And it's so I sang it when I was doing some ritual on my own, and it was very cool and pleasant. There's a second, so there's like this where it's now I don't remember what it is off the top of my head.
Uranian,
Anadian,
Chthonian.
And so that part I was really familiar with and I knew the tune, but then there's this other part about like dogs howling yes. down your love, and I totally forgot the tune of that, and I just yeah. made something up, and I was like, that actually sounded pretty good.
Was it awesome? Yeah. yeah.
And so this last time when I was doing it, I was a little self-conscious because my friend is actually a operatic coloratura. Like, she yes. can fucking sing.
Yeah. For real sing.
Can that's for real like, sing.
That's like real-time singing.
Coloratura is like the vocal range that's like above soprano, so it's super high.
Jesus, wow.
And she famously, one of my favorite things in the whole universe is she likes to do karaoke or rock band and sing Boston, but in her opera voice.
Love it.
So it's like,
oh my God.
And she says her dream is to have an all-girl Boston cover band called Beantown.
Oh my God.
I think it's so fucking funny.
But wait. Do you mean Frijole Town?
Frijole!
Oh, you knew I was going to bring it back.
Oh,
my
God. Can we do like a Boston mariachi cover band?
Yes. Called Frijoles. For Holy Town. Wow. That's fantastic. And I would totally try to be a part of that band if I could. That's amazing.
Yeah.
They have such great harmony, though. It would be such an amazing choral arrangement if you did it that way. It would be so great. But yes, she can sing. Like real sing.
So it was a little, I was like a little self-conscious at first, but I was like, but I got over it pretty quickly. And it was very
Did she
pleasant.
Join in?
No, because she didn't know what the tune was going to be really.
Right.
So yeah. But yeah, singing. And then interestingly, when I started getting the dropsies real bad,
Did you break anything while you were singing?
All three of my singing bowls. So I have one that's like a ceramic one that's, I don't know, like 6 or 7 inches across. And it's got a nice little tone. And so we did that. And it was like, it was very pleasant and satisfying. And then I brought out one that's slightly larger that Brandon gifted to me that is black glass. It's got all these Buddhist mantras carved on it. It's got Kuan Yin on the inside. And beautiful. That one is, it's got like a kind of more bright, ringy sound to it. And that one went on for a little bit longer and felt like a little more humming and resonating. And then I brought out
the bad boy.
The big old one, the big old bucket. Because someone on Facebook was selling one of like the bucket. Big ass, it's like, I don't know.
Shit, I need to
like
get
gallons,
on Marketplace or something.
Gamble.
It's so
like,
big.
So
it's this big
crystal... giant crystal bowl, and it's like, I don't know, like I want to say like 22 inches across. It's like,
is it that big?
It's like a bit, it's bigger than like a big old paint, like a 2 gallon paint bucket. It's like two
Holy
or three
shit.
Gallons. It's big.
Wow.
It is big.
Yeah.
And so
they're not affordable if you didn't
find it. No, they're like $500, which is why I was like, it was on sale for like someone was selling it. They're trying to get rid of it because, you know, it takes up a lot of space. Fucking giant. 3 gallon singing bowl.
Whatever, I'll find a place for it. Holy shit. So okay, so then you brought out the big boy. What happened?
And then so I start singing, and it sounds great in my witch room because it's on a hardwood floor that is obviously hollow underneath because my house is pier and beam. And then also there's a turret in the room, so there's this circular element to the room, so sound tends to circulate in a very pleasingly acoustic way.
Lovely.
So it starts going, and it's like, I mean, it is like,
it starts
vibrating the floor. You feel it like moving through your chest. And when I finally stopped, it kept ringing for like a good 2 or 3 minutes. It was bonkers. Like,
whoa.
Katie and I were both like, what the hell, it doesn't normally, like, I mean, it's a big old thing, it's pretty impressive, but it doesn't normally just keep
resonate
going.
For that long. Wow.
Yeah, but it was definitely kind of like a like summons like, so doing this kind of like droning humming sort of call earlier and sort of really like attuning myself to this sort of like humming vibration of my own voice.
Yes.
And then moving on to these exterior instruments. It just seemed like it kept building and building and building.
Like it was all part of the same thing.
Yeah. And it was like once like the air got like a feel for these sound waves moving through it, it was like, let's
we like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
But it was very weird. It was an unnatural, spooky, magical effect. Ooh. It was very like, what the fuck?
Those are our favorite kinds of nights, man. That's awesome. Oh, wow. Well, that sounds really amazing. Did you now when you were doing anything else that night, did you feel Hecate, or did you feel like just a difference, or I don't know. Just tell me about your shit. Did you feel?
Well, I have. This is kind of a big detour. So, well, first let me answer your question.
Yes.
Which is, I think part of it was, you know, I had plans for a couple of, like, I had another friend that, like, specifically requested, like, hey, when is the next right. witch time?
Yeah.
And couldn't make it. So, through no fault of her own. And then I had another friend that was, like, a no call, no show, whatever.
Right.
So, it going from me all day preparing, like, getting off of work at 5 and then, like, cooking straight up until 7:15.
Everybody got there,
trying to set up, clean up, whatever. All of that, and then it kind of coming to a screeching halt and sort of shifting gears to being more of like a witch and bitch with one of my best pals. We were kind of talking about other stuff and eating, and there was like way too much food and all of that. And also, it was like stiflingly hot. So a lot of the stuff I would normally be doing, like doing a fire, like I was like, oh, I would love to do my little fire bowl and use some of the magical voices or barbaric spell names that we'll get to in a minute. Those would be really great as a chant, but I was like, I don't want to run around this room, and I sure as hell don't want to like light something on fire in here.
No.
So it ended up being much more chill, and like, and I said before, I feel like some of the magic that I experimented with from the book seems to operate on a different timeline and different space.
Yeah.
And in a different way that I am used to. So it oftentimes feels like in the moment it, quote unquote, isn't working.
Doesn't do anything. And
that's just because I'm not calibrated to the levels on which it's operating.
Right.
Other than getting the dropsies real bad.
Now, so, you know, that's part of it. If that happens every single time, that's crazy.
Yeah. So getting the dumbs. But yeah, it's just something about it's operating, you know, and maybe I hope, or I would wager, and if it doesn't, it's okay, that maybe with practice, the derpiness will subside because I will eventually get calibrated to this current and be able to sense it and sense how it's operating and sort of feel it working. Or get used to sort of the order or the vibe or whatever. And hopefully maybe that will be less disorienting to me. And I won't have these effects of being kind of derpy. But even if I am, I mean, that's like a small price to pay for some like really strong magic and fun times. So, I mean.
Well, and also, I think there are a lot of times where, especially if it's like a thing I'm hosting or whatever, there's no point in time where I am like stopping all of the getting ready part and like grounding. So, you know, that would really lead me to probably get the dumbs or be like dropping shit and stuff, just because I haven't really taken the time to like you said, get calibrated to that energy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think. Yeah. Just time and practice. Yeah.
So, but I mean, I think having, you know, when you're working really strong magic, you know, you got to like give a little to get a little.
Yeah.
So, you know, if the price, quote unquote, of this magic is that, you know, I break dropping a stupid stuff. Candle holder or I drop some stuff or I just feel like a derp.
It's pretty worth it.
That's totally worth it. And I mean, being sort of that fool or like, you know, having that divine madness, is humbling and uncomfortable for someone who likes to be like very composed and on performance wise in front of an audience. So to experience
that's the message. Yeah, maybe exactly. That's the message. Yeah.
So
more paradox for you.
Yeah. I will say that my little black dog, Mr. Herman, and my little black rabbit, Lord Ruthven, they were going buck wild. They were having a real good time with Mr. Herman is a very magical dog. He at first was not. And then I sort of made the introduction between him and Anubis.
Yes.
And Anubis was like, come to me, my child.
Like, come unto me.
And
yes.
Herman was like, oh, okay, I get it. So now Mr. Herman, who is a very silly little gentleman, and is usually just there for the belly pats and slutting it up with my guests and stuff. But when it's magic time, like, he is kind of doing perimeter check.
Wow.
He's kind of monitoring stuff. He's especially checking, like, thresholds and doors.
Wow.
You know, he's kind of keeping an eye on energy levels.
Oh my gosh.
He's very good at, like, going up to people and grounding them if, like, they need some guidance.
I had no idea. Wow.
Yeah. Mr. Herman is
he came a long way.
He's a little Sherpa, like, especially if people are, like, feeling the vibes and, like, getting a little, like, loopy or lightheaded or
he'll come around.
Bejiggity or ungrounded, he'll come up and, like, just quietly kind of guide
like
you.
Like, pet you?
yeah. He'll that's just amazing. Be like, it's cool. He's a little emotional.
That's great.
Support witch dog.
I love it.
And
wow.
Bun Bun is I haven't really experimented to, which I mean to, I absolutely should, because he has been witchy from the get-go. The very first time I met him, he was hopping around my giant black tourmaline gazing ball. He was like, yes,
I like this thing.
This giant black orb speaks to me because I too am a big black orb.
I love it.
Bun. So these guys were hopping around. Okay, and so then the other thing, which I didn't really know when to bring up, but I'm gonna throw it out there.
Do it now.
So I got raccoons in the wall now. So I got I got Mama Raccoon and four little bubbas, and they are cutie patooties
for sure.
So I spotted them the other night out and about on an early evening promenade.
Yes,
and they were walking along the fence line and going back under the house. But the last little dude in the trail kind of got separated and he didn't know what to do, and I'm like shining my flashlight on him being like, you little cutie critters, and he just stood up on his hind legs and put his hands up like,
not me.
Oh my god, it was the cutest.
Oh my god. Oh,
I was like, it's okay, little friend, run to your mama, I'm not trying to mess
with
you. But anyway, so they are living in the space that is inside the pocket door.
Where the possum was?
On the other side, but yes, basically where the possum was.
Nice. Okay.
And holy cow, they're
very
noisy.
Popular place.
They're fucking noisy. Now I understand why people thought my house was haunted.
Yeah.
Because these little guys get up just kind of like in between the floors.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like human children are running around upstairs.
Oh my god.
Like, it's loud. So either there are ghosts and raccoons, or there's just raccoons. And Mr. Herman is quite concerned about this situation.
I'm sure.
He wants to be friends with them, but he's also like, these guys are literally in the house. But anyway, I was thinking about it because raccoons are very dog-like, but they are indigenous to North America. So they are not part of Hecatean lore. And she's obviously associated with black dogs, dogs in general.
Dogs.
But I feel wolves. And, you know, I think of like the Moon tarot card where it's got a domestic dog and a wolf. And they're both howling at the moon. And it's this idea of like the feral canine and like the domestic canine and sort of this connection to your unconscious and your intuition. And so I feel like there's something to explore there with raccoons, because they are also very liminal creatures, because they're wild, they're not domesticated animals, but they're urban. I mean, they're living in my
settings.
House. Like, not in the house, but, like, in the walls of the house. But
we had them in the backyard in San Diego. Yeah.
Right,
they just hang out and they're chill.
But they have carved out a niche for themselves and are, like, thriving population-wise by adapting to an urban environment and scavenging. and they're obviously super adaptable. They're omnivores.
They're very amazing little hands.
They're crafty with their little people hands and their little very bandit crafty. Masks. And they are. They're kind of like these little bandits, you know? Like, they look like they're wearing a little bandit mask. But then they also have this, like, sort of mischievous, curious, crafty nature.
But also,
nature.
Like, kind of like, and they have, like, a... And so, ... to the end of everything they do. Like, and so, what are you going to do about it? Like if you wanted them to get out of your yard, good luck. Because they just are like, I don't know. I like it here. You know, they're just like, they don't scare. To me, the ones that I have dealt with have never been scared easily.
Oh, my God. Me. These guys, heard them making a ruckus on the roof, and I've got one spot in my house where, because it's a two-story house, but there's a few spots where there's upstairs windows that overlook the first story. Mm-hmm. So you've got some, like, first-story roof action that you can access through a window. And I had these guys, I started throwing cat food at them because they were up there, and they just, like, came straight up to the window being like, I'd like to order some handfuls of cat food, please. Thank you.
Oh, oh my God.
And they're like, I would like some too, please. One order of a handful of cat food. Thank you. Yeah, like, they came totally straight up to the window. Yeah.
They just fit themselves in. And, you know, I've seen plenty, you know, you can go all over social media and see all kinds of raccoons doing all manner of human-like things. But, right, so... Yeah, I think, and they're actually living in a liminal space.
They're living like in a pocket door. They're literally in the door.
Threshold. They're in the threshold. Holy shit.
So I feel like there's, and I mean, they are very dog-like. They make barking sounds.
Yeah.
So, yes. What I'm saying is, need to do more research into raccoon action with Hecate.
But I feel like that energy is there. Yeah. I think we're not going to be able to get to fucking names and voices.
I know.
Tonight.
We spent a lot of time on beans and raccoons.
I mean, I think it was totally worth it, don't you? Oh, frijoles. Oh my God. Yeah.
But yeah, this kind of got derailed into 90s music and frijoles and raccoons, but there's
Milagros and birds. And
there's still more to talk about this week's lecture series. So yes. I'd like to talk more about the god face and masks, and we haven't even gotten into the barbaric tongues and magical voices,
the names and voices, right? So we will do that on the next episode. But hey, thank you for coming along this ride with us. We're having a great time, if you couldn't tell. But thank you so much, and hocus pocus, bitches.